Welcome to the Exotic Pet Collective. My name is Richard, and today we've got a special guest on the podcast. It's someone I've been following on YouTube for, well, probably since before I was making YouTube videos, for sure. Just crossed 10,000 subscribers on his YouTube channel and did his first ever live stream last night, which was a big success. So I want to welcome to the podcast our first ever official guest, Alex from Tarantula Haven. How you doing, Alex?
Hey, Richard. I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for having me on. I'm having a lot of firsts here. Yesterday, I did my first live stream. This is my first podcast ever. So
it's a busy weekend for you.
Yeah, it is.
So congratulations on crossing 10,000 subscribers. That's a no small feat on YouTube.
Oh, thank you.
And your live stream went very well last night. I think at one point you had over 150 people in there. Did you get any of the statistics from that? Like, what were your max stream at one time?
I wasn't sure. I didn't even look at it yet. I think my wife told me it was at 160-something or maybe 180-something at the highest, but I'd have to look.
Yeah. It seemed like there was a lot of people in there, and they were really enjoying it.
Yeah, I was surprised, and I was really nervous. It was, you know, I was just overthinking everything, and some things were not going the way I wanted them to, and then that caused me to lose track of what I wanted to say and do. So yeah, so some of it was lost in the process.
I understand.
Of course, nobody else would ever know that,
right? Well, they do now. Yeah, I remember. I mean, it went really well compared to like probably my first five live streams. I think that, you know, when you're watching live streams, there's a lot of things you don't take into consideration, you know, like especially for us, because we've got tarantulas, like live tarantulas. So we're paying attention to what the tarantula is doing, how it's reacting, what we're doing, what we're saying. And then also got to worry about, is this in frame? Is it in focus? Can you hear me? What are people saying in the chat? Like, those are a lot of things to be running through your mind at one time.
It is. And that was probably the most difficult thing for me, was keeping up with the chat. And because there's always a delay anyway. And I think I see it first before it comes up on the chat, but it's just kind of a weird thing. And yeah, you're trying to watch one thing that you're doing, and you're trying to talk and interact with your visitors there, your subscribers. But then I think the part that really gets me was trying to, I guess, keep a flow of conversation going, you know, not trying to have too much dead air.
Yeah, it can be difficult. I understand.
Yeah, I really appreciate what some of these gaming YouTubers do, and when they're streaming and talking constantly, because I can't do that.
Yeah. I mean, I actually thought about that. I feel like the gaming YouTubers that are live streaming actually have it a little bit easier. Like, I watch my kid playing Xbox, and it's just a constant narration the entire time he's playing. Whether I'm listening to him or not, he's explaining everything that's happening. So I feel like it kind of comes natural in that situation.
Yeah, I think it has to do with what you grow up with, you know, because when I played when I was a kid, it was on a console and you weren't really with anybody else. You know, you were just playing by yourself. And now these kids, they play and it's a community and they're constantly talking to each other. So I think it's a lot easier to keep up that chatter.
Yeah, I think you're right. So you got 10,000 subscribers now on YouTube. How long have you been on YouTube?
This will be, I believe, my third year on YouTube. Believe it or not, last year was only my 100th episode. So I've only done 100 videos.
Okay. And how soon after keeping tarantulas did you start making YouTube videos?
Let's see. Well, I started keeping in about 1996, but I didn't really get serious with it until about 2015.
Yeah.
And I had gotten my first HMAC, and I kept some New Worlds before, but I never really thought about going into Old World. I'd see them at reptile shows and things like that, and I'd admire them. I'd seen Pokies here and there, and I've seen, you know, the Cobalt Blues and stuff. But it was always kind of a warning every time I tried to get into one. You know, I'd pick them up, I'd look at them, and sometimes I'd get the vendor will tell me, you know, you got to be careful. They're very venomous and that kind of stuff. They're fast. Right. So it would always put me off. And of course, my wife would be like, you're not getting that. So that was the whole deal. But it was until I met a friend, and I met him through a former student. But he kept several tarantulas, and he was trying to sell me some. And one of them, there were actually two HMACs that he was trying to get rid of. And I think he was moving or something. So I went to look at him and, you know, talked to my wife about it. And the more I read about it, the scarier it got, because they talk about, you know, the second most potent venom. And I don't even know how they measure that. But those were just some of the things that I was reading. And, of course, the bite reports that you read and so on. But he kept trying to convince me, and he said, they're not that bad, you know, as long as you do things correctly and you don't really handle them or anything like that. So you're not really putting yourself at risk. And so I finally talked my wife into it, and she finally agreed. So I got it. And at first, you know, it seemed pretty cool because I had them in jars and I could look at them and all that. But then when it came to rehousing, I got my first experience of how fast and how defensive they are. So it really spooked me for a little bit. But then, of course, I watched rehousing videos. I watched Tom Moran and how he uses the catch cups. And I watched some other ones, even Petco. And so I started getting a little bit more confident in it. And once I did it successfully with the catch cup and everything, then I felt a whole lot more comfortable. I did the old put them in the bathtub and kind of walk them over, try to walk them over thing. And they just ended up bolting up the side of the bathtub, you know? Yeah. So yeah, that didn't work. That didn't make me feel any better.
I don't think I've actually ever tried rehousing in a bathtub before.
Yeah, a lot of the older videos. Yeah, a lot of the older videos have that. And you know, you look at those and you're like, why would anybody ever do that when it's so much easier using a catch cup now, you know? So, I don't know. I guess you live and learn.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, especially like, you know, making YouTube videos and being part of the hobby as far as being on social media with Facebook groups and stuff like that. It's a lot of those old videos and old husbandry advice and stuff like that is still kind of, it doesn't go anywhere. Somebody makes a post or a video, it stays up. So I find it interesting sometimes some of the ideas people come up with that, you know, like rehousing a tarantula in a bathtub or something. It's like, where did you come up with that idea? And it turns out it's a video from 10 years ago or something like that. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of information out there that, is outdated, or people have found better ways. As a keeper yourself, like, how do you go about determining what's good or beneficial as far as like husbandry and care advice and stuff like that?
I guess I tend to look at the, I usually will look at the age of the video. That's a big tell.
Yeah.
And, then of course I look at who it is and I mean, views and all that doesn't really cover it. It doesn't really tell you whether they're reputable or not. So I guess I just kind of use common sense from what I see. And if it looks like it's something that would be successful, then I try it and I will adopt it if it works for them and it works for me. So I guess that's kind of how I got into the whole thing with using catch cups too, you know, because when you first start out and you don't know any better, you're just trial and error, trying different things.
So are there any, I mean, you mentioned videos, but are there other like websites or anything like that you use?
I did a lot of searching on that. And what is that? Mike's Tarantula or something like that.
Yeah.
Green page and yeah, just familiar text. Yeah. Very few pictures or anything like that. I use that a lot. But of course, a lot of that's really old information. I did look at Arachno boards too. And of course, I don't know. It seems like a lot of the stuff is older on there as well. I don't see tons and tons of recent stuff, but I guess you can sort through that. But I have a hard time just sorting through all the stuff on the forums, you know?
Yeah.
But Facebook groups are great. And, YouTube videos are probably the best because you've got the visual, you know, and you've got people actually doing it and demonstrating it. So I think that's probably the most reliable way to go.
Yeah, I've found one of the first websites I found was Mike's. I wish I could remember the name of it. Mike's Basic. I know it's basic. Mike's and Tarantulas. I think Mike's. Yeah. I don't remember, but
it always comes up. It's like the first thing that comes up. So,
but just looking at the website, it looks like it was made in like 98 or something like that. Yeah. Like it looks like a 20-year-old website. But I was actually on there the other day.
HTML skills.
Yeah, I was on there the other day, and he had updated the Brocky Pelmavoggins to Tillicoddle. Or however you say it.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, he's still updating.
He's
like,
still alive. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm interested to find out who that is.
Yeah. Cause sometimes I think, you know, it's a zombie website and it's just dead out there, you know?
Yeah. But
yeah. If he's still updating.
Yeah. I was impressed.
Mike, who are you?
But I feel like a lot of people come across that one. It seems, I mean, it's something I struggle with. Because I'm trying to build a website as well, and it seems like there's just so many species. With you know, it's difficult. Just it's time consuming just to type out all of those care sheets.
Yeah.
So it's hard to find. I mean, there's a lot of websites out there like mine that have maybe 10 or 20, but no one that has like a full list of really good husbandry.
Right, Tom's Big Spiders. You know, that's another one that pops up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he has the time to update his website and do his podcast and do his videos and all that stuff.
It takes a lot of time. Yeah. So you keep tarantulas, and occasionally I can hear a bird in the background. Like what other pets are in your collection?
I've got snakes, and I've been wanting to get out of my snakes, but I don't know if you've ever tried to get rid of a snake. It's like, people will want it, but they don't want to pay for it, you know, and it's hard to move them. So I've just held on to them. I feed them, but I kind of regret it every time because it costs money. Yeah. They're a lot more expensive than my tarantulas.
What kind of snakes are they?
I have two Colombian boa constrictors.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, your typical red tail boas. I've got a California king snake, but it's an interesting morph. It has a like solid black belly on it.
Nice.
And it's like they were trying to get a solid one. I did have one that was solid black, and it had a white stripe across its back. Nice. Looks almost like a street, you know,
just
a white stripe. Yeah. And let's see, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I want to say 5 corn snakes, and they're all different morphs.
Very cool.
And
corn snakes are kind of, they seem anytime I go to a reptile show or something, there seems like there's a whole lot of them, and they're not very expensive, but in my opinion, they're one of the most beautiful snakes out there.
They are, and they get so many color morphs out of them. There's so many that I've lost count of all the different ones they come up with, but I was getting into them, and I like the color morphs and everything, and I've even bred them successfully here and there because they're easy to breed.
Yeah.
But it's hard to move them too. So I just have the ones that I've kept, and I quit breeding them just because I don't want to have more snakes to try to offload and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, the last reptile show we were at, my wife and I, I was looking at corn snakes. I really wanted to bring one home, and there were so many options, so many different morphs, and I couldn't decide and was just like frozen in indecision and ended up not getting anything.
Yeah,
but she ended up buying a California king snake.
Oh yeah. Is that the one that you have there? The one that you showed the video?
Yeah. Well, we actually have two. We've got an Eastern king snake, which is Nola, which is in a lot of the videos. And then the California, Nola's a female Eastern king snake. I can't remember what she named the California king snake, but he's smaller, younger, and he just wants to eat. He's not much on being handled, so I don't mess with
him too
much.
They're very food driven. Yeah, mine, I don't handle it because it will bite me every single time, and they latch on. They don't want to let go. Yeah, they'll just grab on and they won't let go, and then you have to pry them off your finger, and the whole time they're crunching on it, you know, and digging those little teeth in.
Luckily, I've never. The only thing I've ever been bit by is my ball python. And that's just because he's got, I don't think he's all there. And he missed his mouse and got my hand. But you keep any ball pythons or?
I did. And I kind of got out of them simply because I feel like they're overbred.
Mm.
And you have all the ones, the morphs that have the issues with the stargazing and all that kind of stuff. So I just completely moved away from them. I like them. I like the way they look and everything. But yeah, it's just, you know, I didn't want to keep going on with that.
I understand. Yeah, that was another one of the moderators of the Facebook group is, her name's Kylie Banson, and she bought a ball python at the NARBC, and my wife, she was like showing it to us, and my wife fell in love with it. I'm just like, oh, that's adorable. And this was a different one, one of the fewer times, I think it was like the one previous to her getting the Cali. But Kylie was nice enough to tell her that, well, this had, you know, her brother's still for sale. So I ended up walking over to the guy's booth. He gave us a pretty good deal on it.
Oh, yeah.
But like, I never had any desire to keep snakes, really. Like, they just seemed a little too high maintenance. And
they can be, yeah.
But my wife wanted them. And it's really hard for me to say no when she wants a pet, when I have hundreds of tarantulas and scorpions. Yours, yeah. Like, no, we can't get another pet. Like, who am I really to say that? So, you know, I let her give what she wants. And I usually end up taking care of it. But like today, I had to go out and get some headphones for this podcast. So I go out to Best Buy. Go to the pet store, because if I'm ever near a pet store, there's usually something I need to pick up. And I come home and there's this like 10-year-old chocolate lab in our living room. I was like, what's going on? So she just adopted a dog, and you know, she wanted to ask me first. So I got to meet the dog but it's the same situation. Like, I can't tell you no when I'm getting ready to go downstairs and do a podcast with Alex about all these tarantulas and scorpions.
That's a big dog.
so we got a new dog. I mean, we had two dogs pass away in the past 6 months just from old age. And my wife has an affinity for adopting dogs that are later on in life. You know, the dog lives 13 years, 14 years maybe. And she, a girl named Charlie. I think that's a situation. But, you know, she's already 10. She looks old. I guess it's harder for those dogs to get adopted. So she's a sucker for the older dogs.
Sorry for him. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah.
At least you won't have them too long.
Yeah.
You get attached to them and then they pass away on you. That's bad.
Exactly. I think it's a lot of loss. But, you know, you kind of deal with that in the tarantula hobby, though, as well. Like, it seems, even if you do everything right, there's still like a percentage of loss. What experiences have you had with losing tarantulas or scorpions?
Let's see. As far as like tarantulas, I just had my egg sac of my Bacillotheria ophuscus. And, you know, I felt like I was doing everything right and had them in the incubator and everything. And I think I probably maybe should have increased the humidity on them because when they went from first instar to second instar, I had some losses. And, when they went from eggs with legs to first instar, I had a few losses, but not one much. It was like maybe four. But then I had a few more when it went from first to second. And, they were just stuck in molts. So of course, that tells me it's probably a humidity issue, but overall I ended up with, I think, 55 out of 66.
Mm-hmm.
So, still a pretty good yield, but I hate losing them, you know, especially that species.
Yeah. Have you had a lot of males?
I did when I bought them. I had four of that species, and three of them turned out male.
Mm.
Yeah, so I only ended up with the one female. But you know, I don't know if that's an actual, like, if they have a higher male to female ratio in the egg sac or what. But I mean, I guess it's 50-50. But I did have, the ones that hurt the most are, of course, when with your own negligence. I had a H. chilensis, and I was feeding, and I went to get the box down, and I fumbled it and dropped it. And I thought it was okay. It ran around for a little bit, and then slowly but surely it just passed away. So that hurt. That one hurt.
That would be a tough one.
Yeah. I had three of them, And they came, those are the ones that came from Fear Not Tarantulas. Mm-hmm. So to lose that one like that, and that, you know, that really hurt. And then I had one that just matured male. So I'm going to talk to Amanda Beasley, see, because she's got a female, see if she's had a successful pairing, because she did pair hers with a, and it looked like an older male because he was missing a leg and stuff.
Sure.
So maybe I can talk her into pairing it and give me some of the slings.
Yeah. Is that how you, what you normally do when you come up with a male in your collection? Do you breed it or try to find someone to breed it?
I try. I hate just letting them go to waste like that. And I haven't really done very many. I had a Carabiner Versicolor that I'd raised from a tiny, tiny sling. And I was pretty proud of it. And of course, it matured male. So I was like, it didn't take very long at all. It just grew really fast. So I sent that one off. But I did a trade with that one. That's how I got my male P. Cambridgeite to breed with my female. So I never got anything as far as any slings in return.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I try, you know, if I have a male, and rather than sell them outright, maybe I'll send it to them and ask for a few slings, you know, or something like that, yeah, just to continue having them.
I just actually lost a Salmopius Cambridgei, and it just because it was male, and I knew it was, I mean, it lived a lot longer than I thought it would, you know, it was probably 9 months or a year ago it was tapping, and I was like, oh man, but I didn't have a female, and where I live, there's, I mean, nobody really, like within an hour that I know of that keeps tarantulas. And it always seems like when I have a mature male, nobody's looking for it. And then, you know, a couple months after it passes, I see somebody posting, hey, I need a mature male. Yeah. And it's like, man.
Yeah. Where were you?
I did though. So usually I guess what I'm saying is, for me, when I have a male, it's sad in a way because I know it's probably not going to get mated, and just kind of like waiting for it, you know, just trying to take care of it as long as I can. But I know he's not going to live much longer.
Yeah. Yeah. And see, that's the part that gets me. I don't like having them sitting there pacing around and wanting to breed and not having anything to offer it, you know? So I'll try to find somebody.
Yeah.
I've got a few males that I'm going to try to find homes for here pretty soon.
Very cool. I actually had like a good, it was one of those, moments where, you know, like 4 or 5 tarantulas in my collection all kind of molted out male at the same time, different species, you know, and it just kind of felt like every time I see a tarantula molt, it turned up to be a male. Because I don't spend a whole lot of time, because I'm not a breeder. I kind of find it as the return on investment of the time spent getting the molt and sexing it and figuring that out. Sometimes it just doesn't feel like it's worth it to me. Like, well, now I know it's a female. Like, that doesn't change how I'm going to take care of it or what I'm going to be doing moving forward, nor would it if it was a male, really, unless I was planning on breeding. So I don't spend a lot of time sexing my tarantulas just because, you know, for me, it doesn't really make much of a difference, I guess, is what the situation is.
Right. You're going to take care of it just the same.
Yeah. And I'll figure it out sooner or later. You know, like, it's either going to mature out male or I'm going to be pretty certain it's a female. So it kind of, I ended up with a bunch of males, and I can't talk too much about it, but there was this unique situation where a guy that I grew up with knew someone he went to high school with that works for a zoo, and they needed a bunch of male tarantulas for this this project they were working on about, you know, breeding tarantulas. So it was a perfect opportunity. You know, like they needed some male tarantulas, and I was like, I've got like 4 or 5 male tarantulas that are mature, and new world and old world are terrestrial and on board. So I was able to send them like a nice mix.
That's cool.
I can't wait to tell people about it, but like the whole situation was like, you can't, this is all like, you know, a grant funded kind of research project. And essentially they didn't want people to know about it until they, you know, got some results that they can use to get their grant renewed or whatever it is. And they didn't want somebody coming in stealing their idea or something. I don't know exactly how the whole research part of that stuff works, but it was a cool thing to be a part of and get to work with them on that. So hopefully
that sounds pretty cool.
And last I heard from him, everything was working out very well. So it's very cool.
Yeah. And I kind of, I do like sexing them to find out if it's a species that I'm definitely interested in breeding, like my Dolichotheles. You know, I knew that I wanted those. I wanted to breed those. And I'd had them for, I guess, about 2 years before I got the first mature male.
Yeah.
And I guess I keep them a little bit cooler than some people because they say, I've had people say they mature within a year.
Okay.
And so I waited a little while, but I was pretty happy when I did get some males out of it because I already had some females that were ready. And of course, one was successful and the other one, I don't know what happened.
Yeah. I was pretty excited that that you had a successful egg sac for that species because that's one of my favorites. I have one, and I'd actually placed an order with someone to get two or three. They were getting some spiderlings in on import, and then it was one of those situations where things kept changing. You know, like I placed the order thinking they had them in stock, and it turns out, well, no, I don't have them in stock, but they're coming, and then like one thing got delayed, something, and I was just like, let me just get something else instead. So I definitely would be interested in getting a tarantula haven spiderling when they're ready.
You got it, brother. I mean, I will send them to you for free. Yeah, you know, that's part of the hobby, and that's one of the things that I seem to like about our British friends, you know?
Yeah.
It seems like they send each other tarantulas like it's nothing. Yeah. And I understand they're a lot cheaper there than they are here because, I mean, I don't see a whole lot of people. Well, I mean, I guess they do, but it's pretty close, tight-knit groups, and they'll send them to each other and that kind of thing. But, yeah I wish, and I'd like to have that kind of thing, you know, that kind of relationship with people. And I feel like I got that with you. You know, you sent me some scorpions, and anything I have, I'll be more than happy to send you.
Yeah, we should give a quick shout out to the Tarantula Tubers Saturday Night Live takeaway.
Yes,
definitely enjoyed being part of that. And it's I get jealous because they all live. I mean, they're all in the same country, but it's a small country. So it seems like at the worst, they're like 3 or 4 hours away from each other. I don't know if that's accurate, but that's the way it feels.
Yeah, and that's exactly what, you know, what I just meant. You know, they are so close that they can actually get together and talk and participate with one another. And yeah, they send each other stuff back and forth. And, and that's a really cool thing that they have.
Yeah. I mean, I'm 13 hours away from you, you know? So it's like, there's no, I mean, that's like a weekend trip, maybe a week.
Right. And I was so excited when you said you were coming down for the Florida National Reptile Breeders Expo. I was like, you know, Fear Not Tarantulas and Richard coming. So I was really happy and looking forward to it. And then COVID-19 happened. And
no joke. I was looking forward to it as well. Because I grew up in Daytona Beach. That's not true. So I lived down in Daytona Beach like through my 20s. And
oh, wow.
Like, I think I moved there when I was 21 and maybe like 28, 29, something like that. I moved back up north. So going there for that, because I think that was the one that was in Daytona Beach. I mean, it was like,
yes, it is,
like half a mile from where I grew up. So I was excited to take my wife and kid down there and, you know, see some people I haven't seen or talked to in a decade or more. And, you know, I got to see you and Fear Not Tarantulas and stuff like that. But yeah, I was kind of bummed that none of that seems to be working out. I mean, we were going to Chicago, like to the NARBC, I guess that was last March. And my wife the news kept coming out, kept getting worse. And, you know, I was like, I took time off work. I've already paid for the hotel. Like, you know, everything's ready. I'm packed. We're going. And she's like, maybe it's probably not a good idea. I'm like, look, it's going to be fine. We'll wear a mask. We'll wash our hands. You know, we'll be behind a table most of the time, you know, like talking to people, selling. I bought a lot of merchandise. Like, that stuff's not cheap. I needed to go there and sell those shirts and get my money back at least.
Yeah.
And, and it was, I think it was the night before. They kept saying, yeah, we're going to do it. And then the governor was like, nope. No gatherings over 25 people or something. And my wife was, you know, she had her I told you so moment.
Yeah.
It's like, I should have listened, and now I got to try to get the money back from the hotel. And, Yeah, I was too gung-ho. But,
yeah.
I mean, it sounds like it would have been a fun experience in some ways, just because I think Fear Not Tarantula set up in her sister-in-law's house or something like that, was selling stuff, and everybody kind of dispersed to, you know, little shops and stuff around the area. So that would have been neat, but...
Yeah, I noticed that some people kind of took matters into their own hands and set up wherever they could. And yeah, because I mean, that's a lot of stuff for them to haul around and not have a means of getting rid of it.
Yeah, yeah, I couldn't imagine being a breeder, because just from the few breeders I know, that shows like that, especially that one in particular, seems to be like where they get the sales that kind of carry them through the rest of the year. You know, like that's the big show.
Yeah, that's like their Black Friday, you know. They offload a bunch of merchandise.
Yeah, so I as disappointed as I was that I didn't get to go, you know, I was more feeling for those people, because I knew a lot of them, like, they were taking a pretty big hit. They'd already spent a lot of money just getting everything set up and ready for it, and now that was just, the legs were kind of cut out from under them. So it's,
I don't even want to think about how many people have been so negatively affected by this.
Yeah. So, there was something else I was wanting to talk to you about. So you're breeding tarantulas. Like, what do you do with a tarantula? Like, do you sell them yourself? Do you wholesale them? Like, I guess what I'm trying to, like, because I've only tried breeding a few times and it wasn't successful, but you know, it seems like that's a part of the hobby that more and more people are interested in. So a question I get a lot, even though I'm not breeding tarantulas, like, well, I bred my tarantula, now I have an egg sac. What do I do with it? And I'm always like, I don't know, go ask Alex. But so, I mean, what do you do with them?
Yeah. And that was, I faced the same question. I mean, I wanted to breed, and that was something that I had to really think about. What am I going to do with them? So, you know, I guess the best thing to do is to reach out to your local vendors or even online vendors. Mm-hmm. You got people that are willing to take species, and that's a lot cheaper for them than importing and getting from local sources. So, I have a few contacts here in Florida, and, you know, I'll contact them and say, hey, I've got this species. Most of the time they contact me because they see me through the channel or whatever. Okay. And they'll tell me, you know, I want some of those, and we'll arrange a price or even an exchange. I know the last time with my Pecan Bridge, I exchanged for some pokies and a couple other species. But I've learned that it's not necessarily a money-making thing. You know, I'm not really breeding them for the money. I've talked to a couple of people. I talked to Tom Patterson, and I talked to a guy local here, Alex Fisher, and I really wanted to know, how do you set your prices? What do you know, you know, how much to sell them to the vendors for? And they, you know, told me in no uncertain terms that you got to think about their side. They have the overhead, you know, they have to buy the enclosures for them or the dram vials, and they have to, you know, they have to take them to their shows and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of things involved, and, you know, shipping as well. So they want to get the lowest price possible. And they said that one of the things that they do is they'll take a look at what the going price is for that particular tarantula, and they'll charge maybe a third of that. And so, you know, you have a $100 tarantula, you're probably going to charge them maybe $30, $35 for the tarantula. And it seems like you're taking a big loss because you could sell them yourself. But I mean, you end up being a vendor and you have the same issue. You have to buy the dram vials and you have to ship them and so on. So, you know, then you get to experience that side of it. So when you take all that into consideration, selling them for less, you know, a fraction of what they're selling for wholesale, or not wholesale, but retail, you're doing pretty good, you know. So you might make a small chunk of change here and there, but it helps support your hobby, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's something I always appreciated, but I didn't have like a real appreciation for until I got inundated with squirpling babies and just just the process of separating them and putting them in their own tiny little enclosures and then having to make sure that there's plenty of humidity and, you know, feeding them. Like, you got to feed 100 and some scorpions. Like, there's my night, you know.
And you got to feed them little guys too, you know. So, yeah. So, there it brings up a whole new set of issues. So, you got to make sure you're ready for that. And, you know, I don't just breed anything. Like, I've got my Lassiodora parahibana, and I'm not going to breed her.
Yeah, don't blame you.
Yeah, they tell me it's a Brazilian species. You should breed it because you can't import them, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're going to be short of LPs anytime soon. So, no, if it comes to that, then I'll breed her. But I'm not ready to take on 1,500, 2,000. Slings.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, there's right. there's a few with the scorpions, just the taking care of them and all the work that went into that, you know, it really had me kind of like trying to even figure out how some of these dealers, especially like the one man shows, you know, there's like there's or one woman shows, you know, maybe them and a spouse or a friend or something. But they've got thousands of tarantulas, yeah. you know, and they're breeding yeah. and producing more egg sacs and you know, that, yeah, I could
how
see
do
that's
you
a,
keep up?
Yeah, it would be, and another thing, you know, you also have to try and remind myself, I guess, or remind other people is, you know, if somebody imports some tarantulas or they buy an egg sac, there's also a certain percentage that's gonna like it's gonna be lost. You know, just like if you had a retail store, like 1.5 or 3% of your stuff's gonna get shoplifted. Like I'm sure that there's a percentage of loss for tarantulas, like slings that just don't make it, like they just weren't strong enough right. to survive, you know, and especially with yeah. the more expensive species, you kind of got to factor that into the retail price as well. Like I may lose 1 out of every 100 just because they weren't strong enough to survive.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and yeah, that's something definitely that you have to take into consideration is how much they're going to lose just from having them, keeping them. You fall behind schedule, you know, if you can't keep up with all the feedings and everything, you get to a certain point, you're going to have to hire on help, you know, so that just adds to your bill.
Yeah. So it's definitely not a career that I really want to get into, you know, but right. props to people that are breeding and dealing. And I think it'd be even more difficult with some of these higher humidity species or, you know, like the tarantulas that need more humidity.
Yeah. Or your large species, you right. know, housing several of those. I couldn't imagine. I don't have the space for it.
Yeah. I barely have the space for what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. So, and one thing I love seeing is when Fear Not Tarantulas, when Tanya posts pictures of them when they get a new import, and you see the pictures of them in that room and everybody's working on something, you know. Yeah. It really puts that into perspective because it's a big endeavor. It's not just one person sitting there opening enclosures and, you know, putting them in there or opening tubs and putting them in their enclosures.
Right.
You got a whole team of people that's working on this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, I guess they're fortunate enough. They're kind of a family thing, you know?
Yeah. And that wouldn't be a bad job. I wouldn't mind working for somebody else that was doing that. You know, they were taking all the risk and I just was getting right. my paycheck to play with tarantulas yeah. all day. But I don't know if we're supposed to, if I'm allowed to talk about this, but I've seen some people posting pictures online that aren't related to them, so I feel like the word's out. But have you seen the Fear Not Tarantulas brick and mortar store they've got going? I don't think it's officially opened yet, but
oh no, I've seen like the one that they have on their website, but yeah. I haven't actually seen anything. Yeah,
different. I think they had like. I wasn't a warehouse. I mean, I don't want to divulge too much of personal information just from the, I've gathered from the conversations with her, but they're moving their operation into a storefront in Virginia Beach and they got the sign up on the wall. I think Jeff Summerhill, shout out to you if you're listening, but he posted a picture. So it's all his fault. I didn't divulge anything that he didn't already tell everybody.
He put it out there.
Yeah, he posted a picture. I think it looked like he took from his car as he was driving by or something like that. You can see the bushes, and then you can see the Fear Not Tarantulas lit up sign on the
That's cool. The
building there. So I'm pretty stoked. I mean,
because I think the one that they have on their website is not actually like a tarantula shop. I think it's a pet shop, right? It's not just...
Oh, that, yeah. That was just like an exotic pet store in Virginia Beach. Right. They kind of were like working with. But yeah, she's opening up her own brick and mortar retail store selling tarantulas, and
awesome.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I am not a huge fan of Virginia Beach. Like, I would rather go to Florida any day, but I may have to make a trip to Virginia Beach.
Yeah, that would be something well worth the trip.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm not close. Like, I'm not related to Tawny, even though we have the same last name. But people get that confused all the time. They think I'm her brother or her husband or her kid.
Like,
the things people come up with. I'm like, yeah, I didn't even know her until after I started buying tarantulas from her. Got a business card that said Tanya Stewart. I was like, oh, sweet. We have the same last name. Maybe I can get a discount. And yeah, that didn't happen. But yeah, they're good people. She took good care of me. So I always try to repay the favor.
She's great. She does take care of you, though. She gave me an H. Chalensis as a freebie. And that was like one of my first videos. I was doing a video at that Reptile Breeders Expo. And I bought two and she threw one. And so, yeah.
Was that the one you were shooting with a GoPro or something like that?
I believe, yeah.
Yeah. I remember watching that one.
Oh, crappy video.
But she, what was I going to say? We're not related, right? So that was the first thing I wanted to just get out there. Hopefully kind of clear that up. But she is, like, I'm in West Virginia and she's in Virginia, which are two separate states for people that don't know that. But like North and South Dakota. But it's, I'm like in the very northern part of the state. You know, she's on the coast and it's about a 7-hour drive, something like that, to Virginia Beach. But if I were to fly to Virginia Beach, you know, it's when you take into consideration getting to the airport early and the flight time and all that stuff, it ends up taking about 6-7 hours to get there. Like it's because the airport's like an hour away. And and we've talked about going down there a few times, even before she opened up the store, just because I thought that would make a cool video, like a little behind the scenes, what's going on there, and trying to convince her to let me do it and trying to convince my wife to be like, let's take a trip to Virginia Beach. And and that was like the biggest like roadblock, is that, you know, it's as expensive to drive as it is to fly. And also takes flying doesn't really save you much more money. So it's like, are we going to drive or are we going to fly? And then, you know, all this COVID stuff happened. So it just never really took off the ground, but it was kind of frustrating.
If things get better, maybe we can organize a trip or something.
Yeah.
And go pay him a visit.
That would be cool. We need to do some kind of like tarantula community meetup or something, you know?
Yeah.
That was actually something I work right next to this like convention hall where they do like weddings and stuff like that. And they got a cool bakery downstairs, and it's a husband and wife that own it. They're very nice. They kind of adopted me as their business grandson or something like that. Like, they'll bring me lunch at work I don't even order it. She just like, hey, I think you need lunch. I've seen you here all day. So they have this banquet room kind of that they rent out, and they were struggling because of COVID. They couldn't have weddings, they couldn't have conventions and stuff like that. And I was talking to him, I was like, this would be a really cool place to have like a tarantula collective kind of convention, bring in a bunch of tarantula dealers and people that make enclosures, and you know, and get people, you know, to come in, kind of, you know, like a reptile expo, but just tarantulas. But I was like, I don't know if I can convince hundreds of people to come to small town West Virginia for a tarantula convention. Like, might actually have to do that in Pittsburgh or something, Columbus or Cleveland, something, one of the larger cities around, to actually make it seem legitimate, I guess.
Right. But yeah. Well, you never know. You
gotta start somewhere, I guess.
Yeah. People start will small. Travel for stuff.
So, do you have a whole lot of? Somebody was asking this on the Facebook group a few days ago. They're struggling with high, or I don't even think they were struggling. I think they were nervous about getting high humidity species. You know, like the Theraphosa sturmi or blondii or some of the Pamphibida species. What kind of experience have you had with high humidity species?
Well, you know, I tended to avoid them, and I don't keep any Theraphosa simply because of that. And the same guy that introduced me to Old Worlds, he had a Theraphosa sturmi.
Yeah.
And every time it molted, it would break its fangs.
Oh, geez.
And I think it was because he wasn't keeping the humidity high enough. But yeah, he ended up having to squish, you know, roaches and feed it like that and keep it alive. And it finally did grow them back. But it was just scary to me to think about, you know, if you don't watch the humidity, if it gets stuck in a molt or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wouldn't want to have to deal with anything like that, but I do keep some that I suppose are high humidity. I've got my Orphanacus Filipinus. I've got, I just recently got a cobalt blue. And oh, I got that Zenithus Intermedia. From Fear Not. That was the one I got in the mystery box. You know, I'm getting some.
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, just dealing with it and keeping the enclosures, the substrate moist. I try not to over moisten. I know, you know, I don't want to keep it damp, like real soggy or anything like that. But I'm still learning. I'm learning as far as trying to keep a balance and all that. But I've got the benefit of living in Florida. And Florida is very high humidity. So, you know, things have been going on pretty well as far as that's concerned.
Yeah, I could imagine. I mean, I think a lot of times people discount or don't take into consideration how the environment of where they actually live plays, you know, a pretty large role in the tarantula's enclosure, you know, like the environment inside the enclosure. You know, people in Texas or, you know, on the desert, they're going to have to struggle a lot more with high humidity species than, you know, someone like you that lives in Florida. Or I keep mine in my basement. You know, that's where my entire collection is. And I live right by a creek. And just because it's West Virginia and we're also underground, the humidity is much higher here than it is, you know, even upstairs. You know, if I was keeping upstairs, I probably have to worry a little bit more about the humidity. But a lot of those, you know, where it is in your house, where you live in the world, you know, all that plays a role in how you take care of your tarantulas, you know, especially when it comes to humidity.
Yeah. And that's something definitely to take into consideration is what part of the world you live in. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got Florida, which is very high humidity. I will water an enclosure, and after a week, it's still relatively moist. You know, I don't have to keep watering it. But if it's a winter time and I got the heat on, that same enclosure will dry out, you know?
Yeah.
So under normal conditions, the humidity stays relatively high. And I know that if you were to live in, say, California or Arizona, you know, anywhere in the desert areas, you're definitely going to have to really keep an eye on that humidity.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, if you can get like one of those thermometers or those thermostats that you can set up somewhere and they read the humidity.
Yeah.
It'd be a good thing to just kind of look and see what kind of humidity you have.
Yeah. I actually have one of those. I think I even put it in my Amazon storefront as a suggestion for people that keep tarantulas to check out. And it's just like an LCD display that tells you the temperature, the humidity, but it also tracks how, like, the high and the low. So I can look at it any time and see exactly how hot and how humid it got down in here, as well as, you know, the low end of it, and get like a really good idea. Because, you know, while I'm sleeping, I don't know what the temperature, how low it's getting down here in the basement. So it gives me that ability to really kind of keep track of that kind of stuff. And it was like $10 or something. You know, it was very inexpensive.
They're not expensive. But it's definitely worth the investment just to be able to look and see what kind of humidity you're dealing with. Because, yeah, if you're in a dry area, you're probably going to be looking at, you know, very low humidity. Mm-hmm. Whereas here, I'm probably dealing with quite a bit of humidity. And that you also have to take into consideration, what do you have in your house? You know, do you have a lot of plants? Do you have aquariums? You know, that kind of thing. That just contributes to the amount of humidity in your house.
You mentioned you got your Zenithus from a mystery box. Now, I have never bought from a mystery box, just because I think that I struggle with control, maybe. Or, you know, like I'm not a gambler. I don't like gambling. So, you know, but I see a lot of people really, I mean, they sell out, I think, every time Fear Not does a mystery box. You see, it's real big in the UK. There's a few other companies I've heard that, that do mystery boxes. I mean, what are your feelings on that? Like, do you think that's, is it fun? Is it a good thing? Is it irresponsible? Like, where do you land on that?
Having purchased some myself, I feel like it's fun. Mm-hmm. I guess it would depend on where you're buying from and what experience you might have with that, because I've only purchased from Fear Not Tarantulas, but I do know that other places will do a mystery box. I've only purchased from Fear Not Tarantulas, but I like that they give you the clues, and those clues kind of give you an idea as to what you're getting into. And a lot of the times you can pretty much figure out, because they don't make it too, too hard, you know? And just like the intermediate, that one sold out super quick. And people kind of had a good idea really fast.
Yeah.
And they usually coincide with an import that they may have gotten. So if you pay attention, you might know, you know, you might be like, hey, they got some of these in, that might be it, you know?
But somebody told me, they were like, I'm pretty sure it's the Xenethesis. And I was like, man, I really want to, but there's that chance that it may
there's
not
that
be.
Chance.
Yeah, and I'm going to end up with a Mexican red rump or something. I was like, yeah, I'm not going to do it.
I kind of pulled one of those last year. They did the Double Trouble, Tanya's Double Trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, what can that be? And I was thinking about it, and I kind of thought it was one thing, but then I thought, well, I wonder if it's like Monocentropus Balfouri, if they're doing like a couple of those.
Yeah.
And so I took a chance on it, and I ended up with two OBTs. Oh. Which is all right. They're cool. Yeah. I've grown to love them. But at the time I had already had four. And then I got the two more in. So I ended up giving one to a friend.
Wow. It rains, it pours, I guess. Yeah. So there's this, I don't want to say it's a problem, because that would be overstating it, being a little dramatic. But I've noticed, and not so much with the larger breeders, but, you know, one of the cool things about buying tarantulas online, you know, through websites and stuff, is that if you're getting more than a few, they'll usually throw in a freebie. You know, and in my experience, a lot of times that's, you know, like a Brachypelma vulgans or a Lossiodora periobona or something that's, you know, there's
curly hair.
They're very inexpensive, and there's usually a whole lot of them when they're bred. Yeah. So it's, you know, they're trying to, you know, they give you a free one because they've got a bunch of them. Right. But it seems like there's people who are buying, like, maybe it's their first time buying online, or they only have a few tarantulas, and the freebie that they get sent is like an OBT. Or, you know, HMAC. Like I think I've talked about this in a video before, or maybe it was a live stream. Like, I've got three HMACs in my collection, and I've never ordered an HMAC. Like, it's not a tarantula. I really, like, I think they're beautiful. I love that black and white, but they hide so much, and
right,
you don't get to see them, and they're fast.
Schrodinger's
and they
tarantula.
Got that potent venom, and I'm like, I don't want to deal with that, you know? The return on investment didn't seem to match.
I think that might be a little bit irresponsible. And that's just my personal opinion, because if that person didn't indicate that they wanted an old world, especially one with that kind of potent venom, I almost feel like you'd be opening yourself up to a lawsuit, you know, if you
got bitten that too,
or something like that. Because, I know that there are places where they might offer you a freebie or even like a mystery box.
Yeah.
And they will specify, are you okay with old world? You know, or do you want old world or new world or both? You know?
Yeah.
And that way it kind of keeps them from sending the wrong stuff to the wrong people. Because, I mean, what if you're buying for kid, you know, you're buying a couple of new worlds and then they throw in an HMAC or an OBT and you're like, oh, well, you know, it's just another tarantula. But if you don't know what you're getting into, you could be in a world of trouble.
Right. And I don't think anybody's doing it viciously. That's not the right word. That's not the word I was looking for. But I don't think they're intentionally doing it. I I think part of it is like they think they're doing something very nice. You know, they're throwing in a trench that you didn't buy. And I think that maybe, you know, breeders and dealers are a lot more acclimated to, you know, tarantulas, especially the old world. So to them, it doesn't seem like it's that big of a deal, maybe, you know.
Right,
yeah. They'll be fine. This is awesome. What advice would you give people that might be listening that are new to the hobby and they just received an old world tarantula as a freebie in their order and they're not exactly sure how to proceed?
Yeah, I would encourage them to, of course, research that species and find out. And if they're wanting to try, of course, definitely learn how to take care of it and how to deal with it. But yeah, if they're not prepared for it, then I would probably either, well, I don't know if they'd be able to send it back, but maybe find somebody else to keep it.
Yeah.
Because yeah, that's definitely something that a lot of people struggle with to begin with, you know, mm-hmm. Am I ready for old world? And it's either, okay, I got one and I'm going to be ready and I'm going to learn all I can, or, you know, I'm not ready for this, you know, take this off my hands kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we could, you know, if you're new and you're buying tarantulas, most of the places you order, you can leave notes or something. You know, I always suggest if it's somewhere, you know, you're getting a freebie and you don't get to pick the freebie, you know, leave a note that says, I'm not prepared for old worlds, or somehow let them know I don't want an old world tarantula.
Yeah. Yeah. That would definitely be something that I would encourage. And it seems like a lot of the websites now are starting to do where they offer a choice of a freebie, which I think is great because in my opinion, that kind of avoids getting those species that are technically your freebie species, like your LPs and your curly ears and all that. And even though they'll be in those choices, you can choose something else. And of course, depending on how much you spend, you have other species that are a little bit more expensive and not necessarily as common, you know?
Yeah.
That's one of the things. And I know I keep harping on Fear Not tarantulas. I've purchased from other people as well. But that's one of the things I like about them is they give you a choice in your freebies.
Yeah, that's true.
I've ordered from Nature's Exquisite Creatures before, and they also do the same thing. You know, you've got a choice as to how much you spend and all that kind of stuff.
Nature, I'm not familiar with that company. I haven't tried them
before. Yeah, they're out of Texas, I believe. Yeah, they're not huge, but the guy's name is Jerry, and I always forget his wife. I think it's Lily. Yeah, but they're real nice people, and they're not huge, but I've ordered from them and had great service from them.
I'll have to check them out. I'm like not really buying tarantulas right now, but I had some real bad experiences early on, and I would name names, but I don't even think it would matter because they're not in business anymore. But you know, but at the time, they were like the big tarantula dealers here in the U.S. The first time I ordered, it was all good. The second time it got a little shady, you know, like, there was a few things missing and they're like, oh, we'll send you what we left off your order and we'll throw in, you know, two or three really cool species so that you're, you know, not leaving us a nasty review. And then I get the order and it's just the ones I missed. Like they didn't add anything to it. And I was like, well, I'm not going to create a stink. I got what I paid for. You know, they did have to pay for a second shipping. So it's not, and then I placed, you know, months later, it was like an import special, you know, one of those deals you pay before they actually get their import. And, this was years ago, but I mean, I spent like, not like a whole lot, like you see people these days, but for me at the time, it was like $500, $600. Like it was a lot. And a lot of them were like buy one, get one free deals. So, you know, it was probably around 20 tarantulas, a lot of pokies and, it was a Megafipelma species. I was really excited to get some of these and I got none of them. Like the import got seized or something shady happened. The guy was on vacation and, you know, he called me and was talking to me and was like, I was out of town and the guy taking care of him didn't actually take care of him. So I had a lot of losses and it turns out like none of that ended up being true. The business, they were just going, so I just kind of like lost. I mean, they ended up sending me some stuff, mostly nothing that I ordered, you know, it was, you know, but I got the I got some tarantulas and it's like $200 store credit or something like that. And then the website just disappeared and they were just gone. Wow. And I was like, well, this is worthless.
I think I may know who you're talking about because I may have purchased from them too.
Yeah. So that kind of like turned me off to buying online. I took a chance on Jamie's a few times. Never had a bad experience there. It was just, they were shipping USPS, so when I learned, you know, because I didn't know that you weren't supposed to be doing that, and it was kind of dangerous for the tarantulas as well. I think it was because I was shopping at Jamie's and was searching for some species that Fear Not tarantulas came up in a Google search or something like that. And I ordered an avicularia maybe, and a couple other small inexpensive tarantulas because I was a little shy. I didn't want to get burnt. And they had a really good experience, and then just that's pretty much all I ordered from for a few years. Not because I was getting a discount or anything like that. You know, I didn't have a YouTube channel. It just I trusted them and I appreciated their customer service and their communication, and just kept going back because they had a good selection, and through that kind of developed this relationship of. Getting to know them and stuff like that. And they were big supporters of the Facebook group and the YouTube channel and all that kind of stuff when I got that going. So, I enjoy them a lot.
It's funny you should mention that because it hasn't really been that long ago that these websites and stuff were around. And I think they were still like the remnants of that old school. You get these little paper catalogs of what they have, the species list, and then, you order from them on the phone kind of thing way back in the old days. But, it wasn't really that long because I'd ordered from this one guy and the shop closed down. And in fact, I benefited from it because I had ordered, I ordered three P. Metallicas from them, and I ordered two P. Sozzimi. And when they arrived, I got six P. Metallicas I got six P. Metallicas and I got four P. Sozzimi. So I ended up getting double my order. Wow. And I was like, whoa, this guy threw me some freebies.
Yeah.
And then I went on their website and I realized that this person was doing a 2-for-1 because they were closing down shop and they were liquidating all their stuff. So I ended up getting a really good deal. But come to find out, there was some shady stuff going on, which is part of the reason why this person was shut down.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, but it was kind of cool that it was not too long after that I started to discover some of the more reputable sites. And it seems like there's a lot of them that have been popping up. And I think that's really great for the hobby because you've got all these people that are focusing on customer service and making sure that your order's good and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just met a guy and he said that he bought into one of those pre-import deals, spent about $6,000 and he has not seen the first tarantula yet. And it's been a while.
Yeah.
So, you still have that kind of stuff going on, but and now he's got to worry about getting his money back or, when is this stuff going to come in? And the guy keeps telling him it's coming in, that kind of thing. So
with everything going on with COVID, I don't think I'd be buying in to any pre-imports because you have no idea. I mean, what's going on the borders right now with the imports and customs. And what I'm using right now to do this podcast was supposed to ship in July. Like I bought it back in March. It was like a Kickstarter thing. And it was they said the end of July. And then all August was essentially them just saying like, it's in customs. Like there's nothing we can do. We put it on the barge and it's shipped from China or wherever it was coming from. And now it's just in California waiting to get cleared and for FedEx to pick it up. There's not much we can do about it.
Right. And I don't think I've heard more people complaining about late orders and things like that than I have recently. Yeah. And of course it's all the COVID stuff. Mm-hmm. And even FedEx shipments are getting delayed and all this stuff's getting delayed and people are losing stuff in the mail, which is of course not good for your tarantulas. So I haven't ordered anything since this whole thing started. Yeah. I haven't gotten anything new other than from what people have given me.
Yeah. I actually have an order coming in from the bio dude. I ordered some plants for this bioactive enclosure I'm setting up, which is, yeah. Oh, wrong hand. This enclosure behind me that's empty is going to be an awesome, hopefully it's going to be awesome, yeah. But I needed plants and
yeah.
I don't know much about plants, and they were kind enough to like put me in touch with one of their, you know, customer service reps that kind of hold my hand and custom made an order for me. So I was like, this is what right. I want to do. And what plants can do you have that will look good or accomplish these goals? And so they were very cool to help me out with that. But they, you know, I paid for the order. They sent me the tracking information and it's coming through FedEx and it was like being delivered on Sunday. I'm like, no, it's not. Like, why are you lying
yeah,
to me,
I've FedEx? Got stuff in on Sundays. Yeah, FedEx.
So I have a feeling it'll show up Monday, but
yeah. Yeah, Bio Dude, that guy's quite the character and he's made quite a name for himself. It's yeah. Pretty good stuff.
And there's other really good tarantula dealers out there, like Pinchers and Pokies. That's pretty much where I get most of my scorpions from. There's a few others.
Yeah, but they got a good scorpion collection.
And Nate over at Micro Wilderness has been really good yep. to me.
Yeah.
I know there's others that I am forgetting at the moment.
I've never ordered from him, but KF Inverts.
I've yeah, never some ordered
good stuff
either.
About him.
Oh, Simply Spiders. Dustin, he took good care of me.
So there's a lot of good stuff out there,
and it used to be like the only way to find out, you know, who's reputable, who's trustworthy or not, was to go to Arachnoboards and check those reviews,
right?
But it seems I'm not knocking Arachnoboards, I go there frequently, you know, reading. I don't post too much anymore, but it a lot of those I was learning that I couldn't trust all the reviews because it seemed like yeah. someone would start a business and then have all their friends go and leave good reviews.
Yeah, you it's know? A lot of buddy stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But it seems pretty effective. If you just go to it, like, don't even make a post, but you know, just go to any tarantula Facebook group, you know, and just search for the business that you're looking for. And you're either going to see a lot of good reviews or bad reviews, you know, people saying they had a great experience or, people wanting to know what's going on with their order or, you know, complaining about
right.
it. Like, I found that's pretty effective, but you know, there's a lot of good dealers out there. When it comes to, scorpions so much, it seems like a smaller community, like yeah. Pinchers and Pokies is good. And there's a few other, but usually when you're doing that, you're just dealing with a guy and that doesn't right. even have a website that's, you know, selling. He'll send you an email with a list of scorpions, but that's about it.
Yeah, Pinchers and Pokies, I frequent their website just to see what they've got non-tarantula wise, you know. I don't ever look at their tarantula stuff. I feel like they have a little bit of a limited selection, but it's not so much that I don't want to buy tarantulas from them. It's just that I'm more interested in their other inverts.
Yeah.
I look at their scorpions. They've always got hot species on there. And, I also look at their other inverts. Like they did for a while. They had some, tailless whip scorpions. Yeah. They even had Damon Diadema, and I kicked myself for it, but I didn't have money at the time, but I wanted to buy some.
Yeah.
And I just never got the chance and they sold out.
Oh man.
And, recently they had, the P. horrida, the assassin bugs.
Sure.
And I wanted to buy some then, and I didn't have the money then. And then I got some money, and they'd sold out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like every time I have money to buy something, they're sold out of what I want. So I'm constantly looking at their other inverts just to see what they have, because I'm going to pull the trigger on some assassin bugs one day.
I got some assassin bugs at the NARBC from Isopod Source. And I was like kind of walking around at the beginning of the expo shooting, you know, some B-roll, trying to, you know, introduce myself to some of these dealers and get them to maybe, you know, commit or agree to let me interview them. Most of them were like, I am way too busy to talk to you, dude. Like, I don't even know who you are. But when I was shooting some B-roll of their table, they had like the Horde King assassin bugs and some white spotted assassin bugs.
Yeah.
And I had decided, like, I think Dark Den had just made a video about them or something like that. And I was like,
his
this would be
spiny
awesome.
Guys. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, I'm going to do that. And, it was 2019. So it had been my first time ever going, and I didn't really have a full understanding of how expos work like that. And I was like, I'll come back at the end and pick them up. And when I came back at the end, they're like, we don't have anything left. Like, we've sold out of everything. I was like, oh, geez. So like the next, I think that was my first one was in the fall. So that's spring, you know, like 5-6 months later, whatever. I go and like I knew they were going to be there. So I just went straight to their booth. As soon as we walked in the door, I was like, you know, Kate, we're going to go and I'm going to buy these and then we'll go find the Fear Not table. Like I want to get there them before go. They're gone.
Yeah. So I enjoyed your video on how to, you know, go to expos and what to do, that kind of thing, because that's so true. You know, if you snooze, you lose. If you find something that you really want, you're looking for, you better jump on it because it's going to be gone. I've been guilty of that myself. I'll see them and it's something that other people might have as well. So I'll kind of make the rounds and I'll look at the different prices and try to get the best price. But then I'll come back if nobody else has it, I'll come back and it might be gone. Yeah. So then I'm kicking myself. But yeah, I did that. I went to, I think it was in Orlando. I went to Repticon and, this guy, Mike, he's, Exotic Kingdom is his shop.
Yeah.
And he's been my, what the kids call it, he's been my plug for tarantulas since I've gotten into this. You know, he's my go-to guy where I go to look for him. But now I got Amanda Beasley too. So, you know, it's kind of gotten better.
Yeah.
But he had some, the Damon Diadema, he had a couple of them, so I snatched up two of them, and unfortunately, you know, stupid me thought I could keep them communally, and one molted and the other one ate it.
Oh man.
So I'm down to one.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. There was another invert. Peter at Bugs in Cyberspace. Have you ever?
Look at his stuff too.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't really carry tarantulas or scorpions, but man, he's got all kinds of very cool beetles and millipedes and
isn't that where you got your little trap doors and your he's got some cool stuff.
Yeah, he's a very interesting person. Just to talk to, you know, he's got he started a YouTube channel. So he's got some videos on there. His Instagram and TikTok are actually like, they're massive. Like,
really?
How many TikTok followers he has. And I'm like, oh, I'm doing good. I got like 12,500 people. And then I look at his, and he's got like 100,000 followers. I'm like, geez, you know, and it's just, you know, a lot of, different mantises and just cool little inverts.
Yeah. His stuff is interesting. I've seen a few of his videos.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, I've been eyeballing like isopods and I've been looking at the different types of spiders, the true spiders, and, you know, haven't really decided to pull the trigger on any of them, but I do kind of visit. I have my rounds that I make, you know, I'll periodically get on computer and I'll see, let's see what Fear Not Tarantula has. Let's see what Pinchers and Pokies has. And I'll check out Bugs in Cyberspace. And I think, I look at, what's the other one? It reminds me of a movie. What's the movie? Dang it. I can't think of it.
I wish I could help you out.
Pulp Fiction. Yeah. At Pulp Fiction. Yeah. Yeah. I think Pulp Fiction, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, but, you know, I kind of make my rounds and look at different ones and just to see what they have and if they have anything interesting or any good deals or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the interesting things. Shopping. Yeah. I do a lot of that as well. It's usually when I'm supposed to be working. But one of the cool things about the NARBC, when I was getting those assassin bugs, is the isopod source was the booth. And I believe they're out of Massachusetts, something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was New England. And they were kind enough to, you know, give me 10 minutes of talking, you know, while like in the middle of the expo. And, or maybe like towards the end. But, you know, I knew they were busy, and I kind of felt bad, but you know, when else do you have this kind of opportunity? And you know, there's a little lull in between customers, and they were talking to me and were showing me, like, I wanted to see the assassin bugs, like that's what I was interested in, and they were like, yeah, those are cool, but check out these awesome isopods. And I'm like, they're roly polies, like who's gonna care about that, right? Until they broke them out and were showing them to me. And I was like, these are some of the most colorful and cool look. Like, they're what I have up here. I mean, like, when I think of isopods, they were completely different and kind of like got me turned on.
Enjoyment out of them.
Yeah, yeah, and those rubber duckies, they were like six of them for $200 or something. I'm like, wow, yeah, like that is expensive.
Yeah, that's way more expensive than I encountered. There was a shop in Orlando, and they had them, and I think they were selling, I think it was like 10 for like $150,
yeah,
and they sold out.
Wow. You don't quote me on that price. I don't know if that's what they were actually selling for.
They're super expensive, but I mean, the husbandry is a little bit different, and mm-hmm. they're not exactly very quick breeders. So, I mean, they're not as plentiful as some of the other ones. Cause like, you know, your Porcelio Levius, the dairy cows, those things breed like crazy.
Oh man, they're blowing up right now. Yeah. Here.
I've got the powder orange. I forget the species name on that.
Yeah.
But those are like just crawling right now. I'll probably have to thin them out or get a bigger tub for them. But yeah, they're just kind of fun to watch and feed and everything.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, because I did have like a subscriber, what's the big deal? You know, they're just roly-polies, you know, but they're kind of fun. They're fun to watch. Yeah, I want to get some of the clowns. You know,
me too. It's one of those things. They're too expensive. Yeah. What Isopod Source did is just kind of opened up my eyes to that, even being part of the hobby. I think their website's isopodshop.com. And I should really be reaching out to all these people, see if they want to sponsor the podcast, since we've been talking about them so much. But when I that was my first experience, even thinking, like realizing people were into keeping those for more than in just a cleanup crew. Like I thought you just bought the, you know, dwarf tropical isopods and throw them in your enclosure, and it takes care of a lot of the cleaning and, you know, this is your bioactive thing. I didn't realize there were so many different species that were being bred and sold. And and then I met Peter. I think he reached out to me on Instagram or something and wanted to send me a few things in the mail and kind of like do like a collab video on the trapdoor spiders. And that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed talking to him and getting to know him. And then he introduces me to Russ from Aquarimax. I don't know if you've ever checked out his YouTube channel, but you know, he's got all kinds of great tips on different types of isopods and inverts. And actually, when I got my tailless whip scorpion, that's where I learned my husbandry from.
Same here. Yep. Cause I got mine and he had the best husbandry video that I could find. And it was like, it answered every question that I had.
Yeah.
And,
he's very knowledgeable. I actually did a live stream with him a week or two ago on his channel.
I watched it.
And it was kind of cool, like getting to talk to him before and after, you know, like when you're in the green room, the virtual green room, and discussing, you know, what we're going to be talking about, what to expect. And then afterwards, you know, we talked for probably like another 15 or 20 minutes, like to the point I was feeling bad because I was like, I think he's trying to like hang up the phone, and I keep like pulling him back into the conversation. And, you know, but we were talking about isopods essentially. He offered to send me some, which I can't remember. I think they might, the ones he just did a video on them. He just got some in the mail. They were the black with the little yellow spots. And so I was like, yeah, we'll have to work that out. That'd be very cool. And you know, he was a good guy. You know, I asked some questions. He was able to answer them for me. And I look forward to working with him. I think he's going to be coming on the podcast here soon. So that'll be fun. But yeah,
another one. And I think him, Russ, and this other guy named Wally. And Wally does Supreme Gecko.
And I haven't heard that
his YouTube channel isn't that big, but he's really knowledgeable on isopods, and I looked to him for information on isopods. But his channel is Supreme Gecko, but he's got the isopod vlog or something like that, and he just goes into isopods and how to keep them and everything, and he's got some good info on there too.
All right, check that out.
Yeah, I subscribed to him and Russ both, and I watched their stuff on isopods because I like them. I like to, you know, learn as much as I can about them just to keep them, and I get an enjoyment out of watching them. I got the Armadillidium maculatum, I think, is the zebra ones.
Yeah,
and those are so cool looking, but they're slow breeders. I can't get them to breed. The other ones are blowing up.
Yeah, I think it was Arthropod. arthropod ambassadors sent me, I can't remember the species name, but they're like these really large, like just big, huge gray isopods.
Yeah, I've seen those.
And I really like them. And yeah. I thought they were very cool. I had them set up in what I thought was good, you know, some good husbandry until I watched, yeah. I think it was Russ, I think it was Aquarimax, had a video on their husbandry, and I realized I actually was keeping them a little bit too damp.
Oh, yeah.
So I pretty much just made a whole new enclosure with different substrate and, you know, set it up the way he had his setup, and now I've got a ton of babies. I'm like,
whoa. Wow, that's really cool.
I got a lot.
Big difference, you know? Major difference as to how, you know, you keep them, what they're going to do. Because, I mean, they've already been through it. And, like, I know on Wally's video, he talked about keeping a particular species, and then they were, like, dwindling instead of flourishing.
Yeah.
So he made some changes, and the next thing you know, they start breeding again. So,
yeah. I think the biggest change I made in that is, it was a type of substrate I was using. I think I got some, like, isopod substrate, I believe, from... I think it was from Josh's Frogs. They have like a mix of isopods. So I was like, that I know they'll enjoy that. But I also just added more ventilation. Like I thought, you know, they needed a little more humidity, and I just like tripled the amount of ventilation in the enclosure, you know, I just drilled a whole bunch more holes and they seemed to really like it. Now I got tons of babies.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
But yeah, I look forward to learning a lot more about isopods and millipedes. I got bumblebee millipedes. I changed their husbandry a little bit after watching one of those YouTube videos that he had suggested, and now I've got baby millipedes.
So, awesome.
it pays to, you know, to watch this stuff, and you know, kind of like what we were talking about at the beginning of the conversation, you know, bring everything full circle here, it really makes a huge difference on how relevant or recent the care sheet or care guide or care video you're watching is, because I didn't just like make this stuff up, you know, like I looked online and read some like just strange website, the first website that popped up, and it was saying this is how you take care of these millipedes or these isopods. So I was like, that was at the top of Google search, so a lot of people are looking at it, so it must be good information. And right. So you know, and then I watched one of these videos that was made recently and realized no, that wasn't, you know, it wasn't bad. I'm sure at the time that was how they were doing it, but I think that's kind of how you get let down with like the YouTube algorithms and the Google algorithms, like all those, the SEO stuff is they prioritize the videos with the most views or the websites with the most traffic. And a lot of times they only have that many views or that much traffic because they're so old.
They've been around forever.
And yeah.
They've already got millions of hits on them, but they'll still pop up as relevant and people still keep hitting them. So,
yeah. I mean, I think if you just search into YouTube, how to take care of a tarantula, the first thing that pops up is that Jungle Bob like video, like the howl cast.
Yes.
It's just horrible.
That tarantula cat tore
the
apart.
That's the one. You know, but I mean, if you didn't know anything about tarantulas and you were searching, you know, that video has millions of views. So you would think this is it. Like this is reliable information.
You put them in this glass enclosure and you slap a heating pad and you put a cup in there with a sponge and you're good to go.
Oh man, I was at Petco today. I mentioned earlier, and I was grabbing some crickets and some aquarium sand and a few other things. And while I'm waiting, you know, for the associate to come out with my crickets from the back, I always go to the reptile section and kind of look around, see what they've got. For whatever reason, my pet store just has a horrible selection of anything. Like, and half the shelves were empty. I was like, what is going on in your reptile department? This is embarrassing. I got to like drive to Pittsburgh to get a good selection, but they had these new Zilla, what do they call them? Zilla. Have you seen these, the acrylic enclosures for tarantulas? That's it. Yeah. Have you actually seen them yet? Oh,
I haven't bought any.
Yeah, I don't think you can. That was the main thing. I was like, there's no solid bottom. So you're going to have to like get some like epoxy or, you know, a silicone or something to seal that bottom up. But that's not even the big problem. The problem is you're familiar with AMAC boxes, right? You go to the container store, you get one of those, what is it, 4x4x8? I think it's like $3.50 or something like that. You know, like it's what I put my juvenile arboreal tarantulas in. Their Zilla band, rubber band together sheets of acrylic enclosure was $25 retail price for a 4x4x8. I was like, how can I justify spending $20 more for an enclosure that isn't as good just because you laser cut five ventilation holes on either side and stenciled Zilla in it? I was like, that's ridiculous. I was like, well, maybe that's just the small one. So they had a terrestrial, I think it was like 8x8x12 or something. It wasn't that big, you know, it was kind of like one of those Pioneer shoe boxes or something, you know, Pioneer boxes are you familiar with the Pioneer? They sell them at like a Hobby Lobby or you can buy them online. They're display cases for dolls and Matchbox cars and stuff like that.
I got some right behind me here or right down here.
And I think I can go to the hobby shop and get one of their larger ones for like $14.99 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And this was the exact same dimensions, but they were charging $36 for it. And I almost like just started live streaming. If I had a better signal,
that would have been cool.
I would have done it because they had the box pretty much with tarantulas on it, saying like, this is ideal for a tarantula. You know, like we're selling this so you can put your tarantulas in.
All tarantulas.
And it was a Monocentropus balfouri was a tarantula they had in the inside of the enclosure, but the substrate was sand. And then there was like two huge rocks and a fake succulent. So like the tarantula, the spot on the sand that the tarantula was like able to do, it was like the size of the tarantula. I was like, why would you advertise this for an adult tarantula that when anybody could look at it and be like, that tarantula has barely enough room to turn around.
That's what gets me about those, I guess, branded enclosures and stuff. I mean, they've got their good stuff, you know, you've got your Exoterras and all that.
But
some of those things, it's like, and they only make them like small sizes. They don't take into consideration that your tarantula is going to grow.
Right.
they keep them in small sizes and they charge a fortune for them. But, you know, like you said, with the Yamic boxes, and personally, with slings, I don't really spend a whole lot as far as enclosure for them because they're only going to be in it for so long. And those AMAC boxes kind of make it nice because they're not exactly unattractive. You know, they look pretty good.
Yeah.
And you can kind of scrunch them together and make a nice, neat, you know, stack of them or row of them. And it's not until they start getting bigger that I start really thinking about their permanent enclosure.
Right.
So I try not to spend too much on enclosures as far as for smaller tarantulas, unless it's a dwarf species, it's not going to grow, then I'll get them something nice to keep them in.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just drives me nuts when they try to charge a fortune for these things.
And
they're completely off on husbandry. It's just laziness, you know. Yeah. They could do their research. They're manufacturing for pets.
Right.
And if they're going to be specific for a tarantula or something to that effect, do it right, you know. And you'd probably get a whole lot more people getting the right thing, and you probably end up with a whole lot less people getting something bad that their tarantula is not going to enjoy or is going to kill them, you know.
I think that's what got me, is that like you evidently develop this product and are marketing for tarantulas, you know, or for inverts, but you didn't take the time to speak to people that take care of tarantulas. Like you didn't do any kind of research as far as, like, somebody would look at that and be like, there's not nearly enough the depth for any species that's, you know, over 3 or 4 inches to burrow it all. Like,
it's,
you know, you got like an inch and a half maybe of substrate in there, an inch, you know, it was a little ridiculous. And it was the sand, I think, is what really bothered me. Like, who's keeping that tarantula on sand?
It's the whole one size fits all idea. You know, here's this tarantula enclosure, put your tarantula in it no matter what it is. That's what irritates the crap out of me.
And what really kind of blew my mind is what they were charging. Like, just the price. And I understand, like, they got to make money and acrylic's expensive and, you know, marketing and packaging and all that. And then, you know, Petco or PetSmart or whatever, they got to charge, you know, a lot just so they can make money. But I was looking at that and the price of it and Tarantula Cribs is a company I've been doing some business with recently. They've kind of been working on some stuff together, and like they've got beautiful enclosures that are made specifically for tarantulas, you know, that give you plenty of depth and have lids that lock with magnets or, you know, it was, I was like, why would I buy this? Cause my first thought was I want to buy this and review it. And then the more I looked at it, I was like, well, I don't want to really do a review video on it. So maybe I'll buy it just so I can roast it in a video and be like, this is why this product is terrible. Yeah. But then I'm like, I don't really want to spend $35 to do that. Right. So I was like, maybe I can contact Zillow and get them to send me some, you know, and then I was
and
like,
then roast
but,
it.
But then if I did that, like that would just be burning. Cause Zillow makes some really good products, you know, or for other things. So I didn't want to like, hey, send me some of your enclosures so I can just like just tear them apart. And you know, that would definitely burn a bridge there. So I didn't want to do that, but yeah, it was disappointing because I was excited. I remember seeing them, some people posting online about them. I was like, oh, this is amazing. Like a large, you know, pet accessory manufacturer. I don't even know what you call those, like a reptile enclosure manufacturer is making stuff specifically for tarantulas and inverts. And then you see it and it's like, oh, geez, man, like you really missed the mark here.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned tarantula cribs. You know, that makes me happy. Yeah, that you've got somebody out there that is actually, I mean, I've watched their stuff on Instagram. They're putting pictures of tarantulas and stuff out there and everything. So that tells me that they're actually doing it. They're actually keeping critters, you know, that we're keeping, and they're designing their enclosures around these animals, you know. So they're specific for tarantulas, and it just kind of, you know, why did it take this long for someone to start doing that? You know, it's like, I get it that maybe the invert hobby has not really been the biggest as far as, you know, the population is concerned, and they're catering more to the reptile people.
Right.
But they're out there, and I guess that leads me to believe that the invert hobby is really, really growing.
Yeah.
So now you've got other people that are saying, hey, we need to start making these things specifically for them.
Yeah.
Which is great, because if you have those already set up like that, then that takes away a lot of this DIY stuff that we end up having to do just to make do and make enclosure specific for our tarantulas, you know, because even like your Exoterras, they're great, but they're not necessarily set up specifically for tarantulas. You know, they're reptile or amphibian. A lot of people take the screens off of them, and, you know, the ventilation isn't, you've got the port underneath the door and then you've got the top, and then that's pretty much it. You know, it's not tons and tons of ventilation, but I guess it is cross, but it's not specific, you know?
Right. That's something I talked about in the last podcast was, you know, all the different ways that the hobby's growing. And it's evident, you know, by the amount of Facebook groups there are, the amount of breeder websites or like dealers are popping up, the amount of people that are in these groups, but also just the companies that are, you know, like the artists making art. There's a bunch of YouTube channels. Like it didn't used to be that many tarantula YouTube channels out there. Now there's, you know, easily over 100.
They're popping up like crazy.
And then we got people that are actually like, you know, making just enclosures.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Right. Most definitely, yeah. And I've looked into them too. I think Tom Moran is where I first heard about them, and I think he had one made specifically. They custom make them.
Nice.
And I think he had one for his communal, his Monocentropus balfouri communal.
Yeah.
I think he had one made from them. But yeah, I've looked at them, and yeah, it seemed like a little bit expensive. So I've never actually ordered from them.
I mean, I've actually you can't see them on camera, but I've got a couple of them behind me. My inbound 4E communal, they're still pretty young, juveniles. They're in the smaller one. And then I've got a, what is it? A Brachypelma baimi in the larger one. However you pronounce that name. You were talking about that in your life story. And they were great. I mean, the ventilation's good and stuff like that. You know, there are a few things that I would change about that kind of setup. Like the door can, you know, especially if you're using them as a terrestrial type of enclosure, just the gravity on the door kind of in the middle that has really no support, that plastic starts to bow a little bit. Enough for where anybody can escape, but if you're very particular or, you know, anal about stuff being completely in line and straight and stuff like that, it can start to get on your nerves.
Tom had the same thing happen with
it. Did he? That's what I like about especially the large. I just got a shipment in from Tarantula Cribs with some of like the larger enclosures that they make, you know, like for an adult tarantula, like a small New World adult tarantula. You know, you can't put like a blondie in it or anything, but you know, I think it's like it's kind of like about the size of a 5 gallon. It's larger than 2.5, maybe a little bit smaller than 5 gallon, but the way the door works, like the lid slides in on those tracks and has the magnets in the back that kind of lock it into place.
I like the whole magnet thing.
I mean it makes it where there's no way the tarantula can even like get its legs in between the wall and the door to push it open. You know, and it's locked into place. And because it has that support, you know, on all four sides, it's not going to bow, you know, like just a cut piece of plexi. So I think they did a really good job in designing that.
Yeah, I think that's an awesome idea. And personally, you know, I've, with the Exoterra's, got the mini talls, you know, and there have been times when I've closed the door on it, but not latched it. Ooh. And then I come back the next day and realize, ooh, this tarantula could have gotten out.
Yeah.
But having those magnets there, it's like, it's locked, you know? Yep.
That is definitely, I had a Acanthus scuria geniculata escape because I forgot to lock the door on it. I had one of those, I think it was the nano talls or something like that. And it was small. It wasn't like a big one. But it just pushed the door open. Luckily I was down here doing stuff, you know, and it just kind of like turned over and I like heard that creak. I was like, what? Like look, and the door just kind of gets pushed open and it starts crawling out. I was like, oh no, that's not good.
You know, it what never fails to amaze me is how strong tarantulas can be, you know, and when I feed them, like my pokies or, you know, some of the other larger tarantulas that I have, and they grab that roach off the tongs and just yank, you know, you can feel that tug. And I say this because my wife had a, she had a Gramostola porteri that she kept. And I started keeping tarantulas, and then she's like, well, I'd like one for the library. So she had one in the library. And one day we came in and it was not in its enclosure. And its enclosure was an old aquarium. It was an acrylic aquarium that we had kind of repurposed, and it had the light lid, but it was kind of heavy. So I figured, you know, it couldn't escape. It only had like a little opening where the cord came out for the light. And I figured that would be enough to keep the tarantula in. Well, she has a surveillance system in there, and we couldn't find the tarantula. It's just gone. So I thought, well, did somebody come in and steal it, or what happened? Well, we watched the surveillance, and that tarantula literally pushed the lid up, wedged itself in between, and like kind of pushed with its carapace on that lid. And that lid is not light, you know, by invertebrate standard, you know,
right?
But it wedged itself in, pushed it up, crawled right out, and it went all the way to the end of the library on the other side, and we found it in a corner just kind of sitting there. Wow. And she was not happy when I caught it. She was threat posturing like crazy.
I had a similar situation not that long ago. I mean, it was while COVID was happening. We took a vacation. No, it wasn't a vacation. It was like a weekend. I had like a 3-day weekend, and we rented a cabin like out in the middle of nowhere here in West Virginia, just a few hours away. So we go out to the mountains for the weekend, and my son's grandmother, she was like coming by to take care of the dogs and the cats and stuff like that. And doing a little straightening up because, you know, she's a grandmother. So when she's at the house and something's out of place, she's got to clean her. Oh, they need to run their vacuum cleaner. It's like, please don't do that. But she does it anyways. So she comes down to the basement, you know, no fear of all the tarantulas or scorpions or anything like that. You know, it's like most people would like, I'm not going down there.
Right.
And she's down here vacuuming or something random. And she kept hearing this like tap, 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 tap. And was like looking around trying to figure out where the sound came from. And like in the back part of the basement, I've got a big metal door that goes, you know, kind of like to some stairs that take you upstairs to the backyard. And there was, she goes over and could hear this, like something's tapped on this metal door. She thought somebody was outside and she starts to reach to open the door and looks down and sees this huge Asian scorpion, like the Asian forest scorpion. And she calls my wife. It's like, one of Richard's creators got out. and Kate's like, is it a tarantula? I don't know, Kate. It's just one of them critters. And Kate's like, I can hear just to her side. Like, is it a snake? Is it a spider? Like, what is it? She's like, I don't know. It's just a big black critter. And I was like, oh, it must be a scorpion. And so like she caught, you know, she grabbed one of the little, had, you know, all those little critter keepers. Like I got a bunch of those just like laying around. And she grabbed one of those and scooped it up like a champ and put a lid on it and set it on the shelf for me and came home. And I was like, where did this thing come from? Like I check all the scorpion enclosures. They're all locked down. You know, they've got like the metal lid on them and they've got the clamps that kind of connect it to the sides. And I couldn't figure out, I was like, where this isn't native. Like it had to, so I'm like going through all of my enclosures trying to find like, okay, there's a scorpion in that one. Finally, I find the 10 gallon aquarium that had no scorpion in it. There should have been one, you know? And I couldn't, I was like, it's latched. Like it, so the only thing I could figure is that the trench or the scorpion had climbed up the backdrop because I had a backdrop in that one at the time and was able to wedge itself in between the top of that backdrop and the lid and just push up with sheer strength against those clamps, hold it and was able to sneak out. I was like, that's impressive. So from that point on, I don't put scorpions in enclosures with a backdrop because I'm like, they can't climb the glass. So I don't have to worry about it. But yeah, it was impressive how strong they can be.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess, you know, you don't associate insects and arthropods and all that with strength, but you know, I guess we should, cause you know, you think about ants and how they carry stuff that's several times their weight and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's just impressive how strong they can be.
It really is. So what do you got going on in the future? You got any exciting live streams lined up or cool videos you want to talk about? Give us a little sneak peek.
Well, as far as sneak peek, you mentioned Tarantula Cribs. Uh-huh. So I've got a little Tarantula Cribs video coming up.
Nice.
So I was pretty honored that they hit me up for that.
Definitely.
And as far as live streams are concerned, you know, I got my feet wet yesterday and it didn't, I guess things go differently in your head than when they actually happen. So it didn't go like I wanted it to happen. So at least it's got me thinking, what am I going to do for my next one?
Yeah.
And I'm sure 1500 or 15,000 is going to be here like nothing. It just seems like it grows every day. I gained 100 subscribers yesterday.
Nice.
So
yeah, it really seems to snowball, you know, like the more subscribers you get, the more those videos get pushed out, the more people see your content and the more people end up subscribing.
It seemed like it went a lot faster here recently. It's been and I grew kind of fast. I hit 1,000 relatively fast.
Yeah,
but then it kind of slowed down. And you know, of course I wasn't putting videos out as frequently as I should. And now that my schedule is a little bit different, I'm able to put them out more frequently.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm getting more subscribers. People are seeing my videos more. So yeah, it's been growing a lot faster lately. So I'm assuming it's probably going to be upon me pretty soon. But yeah, I felt a little bit unprepared on the giveaway. Most of my stuff is on Teespring and I don't really go buy it and bring it in and have it here so I can show and that kind of stuff. And then I got the stickers and I think you probably, do you go through Sticker Mule?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know how they always have their little promos and stuff. So,
that's the only time I buy.
and I noticed you were showing off some holographic ones, and I'm like, yeah, I bet you he got the 50 for $20 or something like that. Yeah, so I jumped on that too. So I was giving away some of those, but yeah, I wanted to have something a little bit more substantial. So I'm thinking about doing more giveaways, like just on the regular videos, maybe just do a random giveaway and send out a shirt or send out, you know, something else a little bit bigger, or maybe a sticker pack, like, you know, several stickers and a pin or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I wish I would have thought a little bit more on that as to how I was going to do it, because I felt like it didn't go very well. So
I think it went well,
but I'm not really sure what content wise people would like to see. I know people like feeding videos and stuff, but when you do that live, it can either go very well or it can go pretty bad.
Yeah, I've had it go both extremely well and horribly wrong. Like, especially when the tarantula runs out of its enclosure. It's like, well, now I got to chase it for 5 minutes on camera. Right. Sorry, be patient. Once I had
happened to be with the C. elegans last night. She ran out and I had to go chase her.
I think the worst was somebody asked in the comments, like in the chat, about one of the, I think it was a dead leaf mantis or something that I had. And I don't know if you were watching that one. It was like right next to me on the shelf. So I grabbed it. But I grabbed it like a jerk with one hand, you know, it's one of those, Zoomed creature kind of arboreal enclosures. And I get about halfway towards me and it just slips out of my hand and falls to the ground.
Oh, no.
So I'm like on a live stream and just, I didn't shatter, but it cracked pretty bad. Yeah. I was like, oh geez. I was worried that I had hurt, you know, the mantis. It was fine. It was a little shook up, like what the heck just happened? But like the whole back of the glass was just, you know, all cracked. And I was like, no, I gotta clean this up. I was like,
right.
Yeah. It was doing fine until I just dropped it. But
yeah, and then that kind of just shakes you up and throws you off your game, right?
So, it does.
Yeah.
You know, my family was all performers. They were like, I come from a long line of musicians, you know, like folk singers and stuff like that. And that was something, I'm sure it's a famous saying somebody said many times. My grandfather would always be like, never work with children or animals. I'm like, that was his big thing.
Yeah. And
I'm
like, showbiz thing, yeah.
Yeah, and here we are. Working with animals. Like, and not just any animals, like animals that are completely untrained and don't really like to be dealt with, you know?
Yeah. We're, unpredictable.
Exactly. But you know, congratulations on all your success, man. It's really cool seeing everything going so well for you. And I appreciate you being on the podcast and
joining the live streams.
And I don't know, you seem to always be around whenever I'm doing something, and I really appreciate it. You know, especially since like I started watching your videos, you know, when it was like you, Tom Moran, Dark Den, you know, and I was always a big fan of YouTube. You know, I watched a lot of Casey Neistat and, I was watching it for like, just, I enjoyed watching, you know, I just enjoyed that, like Philip DeFranco and a lot of those, you know, big YouTubers. And it felt like I was watching YouTube for many, many years. And then also keeping tarantulas, and never dawned on me, I should look for tarantula videos on YouTube, you know?
Right.
and not just care and husbandry videos. Like, you know, there's some people out there kind of vlog style stuff. So it was very cool coming across you and actually, you know, getting to talk to you in long form.
Yeah.
It's been very cool.
Well, it's been cool meeting you and, you know, it amazes me how you, grew so fast and you know where you are now. What are you up to, like 46 47?
46,000, yeah, last time I checked
it. I mean, that's great, but it's well deserved, because you inspire me as far as how I do my videos, because that's exactly what I wanted to start seeing, is you have a more cinematic approach to it. And I know we kind of watched some of the same YouTubers, and you mentioned, oh gosh, every time I come up with a name, I keep forgetting the name, Peter
McKinnon. McKinnon.
Yeah. You know, and I learn a lot from him, and I get Premiere tips from him, and I watch some of his stuff where he does B-roll and everything like that. But I struggle to find the time to really sit down and record some of the things, because I've, you know, got work and I bring my work home with me. You got to grade papers and all that kind of stuff. So, I have to juggle all that. But I really enjoy the way that you lay out your videos and you really showcase your species. That I think that's made the world a difference. And I think you've kind of set the bar a little bit higher for everybody as far as presentation is concerned.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. That's why. I started because I was like, I really enjoy these types of YouTube videos, like whether they're talking about, travel videos or tech videos or something like that. And I was like, I also like tarantula videos, but nobody's really marrying those two, And I was like, I can't expect like somebody to just do that. I should do it myself. And, it was like, I was just making videos for like the Facebook group, kind of like somebody was asking me how I build the enclosures. I'm always taking pictures of, and I was like, well, make a quick video about that, And I was like, I'll try to work in a little bit of cinematography somehow, with my Samsung Galaxy S7. And it just like, I enjoyed it and it got good response. So it blows my mind sometimes when I think about,
you've definitely put in the work and it shows. And I mean, you deserve all the subscribers you have, because like I said, you've definitely raised the bar as far as, the videos that we produce. Cause for the most part, if you look up, tarantula YouTubers, it's somebody sitting there with their little camera and just showing off what they're doing. But they're not really doing all the extra B-roll and all the lighting and all the effects that you put into it. Yeah, you really make it nice.
I got something very exciting coming probably in the next week or so. I don't want to blow the secret out yet, but I mean, we're 2 hours into this thing, so I'm sure a lot of people aren't even listening anymore. But who knows? They seem to enjoy the last one. But it's this. Yeah. It's a very special camera lens. And and it like made very specifically kind of for like shooting insects and inverts and stuff. And it was something I had been looking at for a while and seen some really cool videos about and was like, man, that's so awesome, but it won't fit my camera or it's expensive and kind of stuff. And it was like, that would be awesome, but I don't have that kind of money. And turned into a situation where somebody owed me about that much money and they didn't have the cash, but they were like, they had like Amazon credit or something. And I was like, well, okay, then just buy me that then. like, I'm not going to get the money. Like, if that's the only way I'm going to get paid,
then I'll send Guido to come break your leg.
Yeah. So it's like that works. So hopefully that'll be coming in. And I mean, it's going to take some time to learn how to use it, but that's get some very cool shots for it. Now,
I'm a gadget nerd myself. I love getting new gadgets and stuff.
and when it's weird, like, just when I like making money off like YouTube ad revenue and just selling merchandise and stuff, this year was the first time I actually had to show that stuff to the person that does our taxes. And, I was at work. So my wife went as our friend as an accountant. So she kind of handled it all. And I had to send her a list of, business expenses or, pretty much stuff that I'm spending money on. And and I'm lucky that I was not sitting in the room when my wife was seeing how much I've spent on cameras and lenses. And she was like, oh my gosh. Just reinvesting the money that I've made into more stuff. But being able to get this lens through this way and keep it off the books so my wife doesn't know.
That's awesome.
But when it comes in, I'll have to show it to you because I think it'll be pretty cool.
Yeah, we got Halloween coming up. You always do something nice for Halloween. So can't wait to see that one either.
Yeah, I'm curious how this Halloween's going to go, though. Because not our county, but where I work across the river, they are not doing trick-or-treat at all. And I was like, they're wearing masks. Like, most kids' costumes have masks. What's the big deal? But even if there's no trick or treat, we're definitely going to be decorating and doing something cool. But anyways, man, it's been a good conversation. I've enjoyed talking to you and I really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for asking.
You want to plug before we go?
No, other than, tarantula YouTubers, Saturday Night Takeaway, I love them. I love their group. I think more people should be watching their stuff because they have all our favorite YouTubers on there, and it's a good way to interact. But yeah, definitely check out Tarantula Cribs as well, because those are tarantula specific enclosures. Yeah,
definitely. You got to love Tarantula Cribs. I kind of feel like the Tarantula Tubers Saturday Night Live takeaway. Am I saying that right? I always feel like I had a word that doesn't belong.
I keep bungling it up. They keep giving me a hard time about it.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of like stand-up comics have like there's a comedian's comedian, you know, like Doug Stanhope or David Tell or something like that. Like normal people don't like him, but comedians really like him. I kind of sometimes feel like their live stream is like the tarantula video for people that make tarantula videos, you know?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It's fun. It doesn't appeal
to everybody else. Right.
Yeah. I guess you're like, we want to see more tarantulas. And it's like, it's not about the tarantulas right now, man. It's about the people that keep tarantulas.
Right.
You know,
they went late last night.
Did they?
And, they asked me to come back and I was on there and I got a phone call from a friend to come get a venomous snake out of her pool.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know how far into it, but it's like toward, I don't know, I think it was like 338. Look at 338, I think. Okay. And I actually did the live stream and went to her house and got the snake and then brought it back. And I still have it. It's a water moccasin.
Oh, my God. So you were live streaming on their stream. Capturing the snake.
Yeah.
Oh, I definitely got to check that out.
Yeah. It's late. It's way in there, though. It's like after I did my stream, but it's in there.
Yeah. JoJo sent me a message and was like, are you coming back to the stream? And I was like, no, unfortunately, I can't. My granddaughter came over and it was like, you know, I'd already spent so much time. Like I left work early just to hop on the live stream to talk to Dark Den for a moment, then watched your live stream. And I was like, I got to spend a little time with the family. So I didn't end up watching it, but I'll have to load it up and check it out. Yeah. We'll leave links for anybody listening to this on YouTube. Just check the description. I'll leave links to Alex's channel, to Tarantula Cribs. And I'll try to get everybody we talked about. I'll leave links down there and you check out Pet Rock and Roll and Alternative Inverts and Invert Kingdom UK. JoJo XO Cavern. Who else am I forgetting, Alex? I know there's... who else is in on that?
Oh, you talking about the Tarantula Tubers?
Invert Kingdom UK, Alternative Inverts.
Yeah. Couch Locked Arachnophobia.
Yes, that's it. Mr. Grindler's. Yeah.
Mr. Grindler's Creatures.
I forgot about them as well. So, yeah, we'll leave links to all that down below. And just wanted to say thanks again, or not thanks again, but congratulations again on... that was the wrong button. Is it this one? There we go. Congratulations again on 10,000 subscribers, buddy. It's awesome stuff. It's not like me, I'm making fun of you. I need to label.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Like I got the rim shot and what's this one? I can't remember what this one is. Yay. Yeah, there we go. It was awesome having you, man. Thanks again for doing this.
And really appreciate it.
Yeah, make sure you subscribe to Tarantula Haven on YouTube. You can also follow him on Instagram. You got a Facebook page too, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So check that out. Stay up to date. You on Twitter or anything yet? TikTok?
No. And I need to hit up that Tickety Talk stuff.
You might be too late, man. I think they shut it down. Somebody,
did they really?
I don't know if they actually did. Somebody said that you can't, if you haven't already downloaded it, they're taking it off Google Store, stuff like that. But there's a new one.
Wow.
It's called Thriller.
So it really did happen.
I think so. I mean, it's Sunday.
Unbelievable.
So I haven't seen the news, but Saturday was supposed to be like the last day. But who knows if it'll work out. No, I checked it this morning. I can still access it, but I don't know if you can download it now. But who knows? I'm sure there's workarounds. But
I'm sure it'll be back.
Well, thanks anyways, man. It's been a lot of fun. And thank you all for listening to the second episode of the Exotic Pet Collective podcast. Somebody said I should call it the EPC podcast or Epic podcast.
Epic podcast. Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Yeah,
that's pretty cool to do that. If you want to follow Alex, he's on YouTube and Facebook and Instagram. You can follow the Exotic Pet Collective on YouTube and pretty much anywhere that you listen to your podcast. I think we should be on Apple Podcast in the next week. I say that like I have a whole company, but we should be on there any day now. But we're on Google, Spotify, all that stuff. Well, you guys have a wonderful evening and thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week.